Hey everyone, welcome to Wake Dad, Drink, Repeat, the podcast that defines today's dad. I'm Anthony Palmer.
And I'm Michael Smith. Palmer, how are you doing, buddy?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Doing well. How's your day going?
It's another day on the COVID hamster wheel, so living my best life. Actually, fair. You know what, man? I don't even like that I said it that way. It's been really good. I have been working on reframing that mindset a little bit. So it's been a very good day. How about you?
It is. I've learned that that's very important. The framing right now, the way that we view our words is mattering right now, because like if we say the hunkering down because of COVID, it's going to start wearing on us, man. So we need to have a shinier
six months in. I'm glad we're figuring it out.
we need to have a shinier spin on what's going on. But I have a question for you.
I have an answer.
Why can't bikes stand up on their own?
Because they're always trying to kickstand.
They're too tired.
All right, fair enough. I was actually trying on that one this time.
You were going with the kickstand theme. You just got the wrong theme.
Yeah, hey, I used the wrong part of the bike, you know.
Yeah, that's on you.
Joke's on me.
Joke's on you, idiot.
Oh, man. Dude, I'm sitting here and I'm wondering how jealous you might be. I don't know if you can see this from all the way over there in Asheville, but do you see this sweet Wake Dad Drink Repeat themed rubber band bracelet my daughter made for me today?
I do, man. That's so sweet. That's so flipping COVID sweet.
It is pretty sweet. I'm going to post a picture of it on the Instagram and we're going to start selling them for $10 a pop. checks made out directly to Anthony Palmer.
That's fantastic. Yeah.
Well, since you're being sarcastic about it, we're not making it out to Wake Dad, Drink, Repeat. We're just going straight to me.
That'll go great for you, man. No, all proceeds can go to you. I think this will go gangbusters for you.
I think our audience base is really going to love it.
I'm excited for you and your family's financial future.
Thank you. You know, you don't have to be such an asshole all the time. Well, guys, this week on the pod, we were joined by Steve Lemig. Steve just is an incredible human. He's a dad to one, Ella, who's 10. We were so grateful for him to join us this week on the pod. He's got a crazy story. But really, more importantly than that, he's the founder of the Wilder Dad blog. He's the director of communications for Roadrunner Sports. Just an outdoor adventure loving, good human that we really enjoyed our conversation with.
Yeah, he's Wilder Dad is very much all about, the Instagram is about spotlighting dads, being active, adventures in the outdoors and through fatherhood, which is an amazing platform for him. And also his blog space is, I mean, one of the top in the country, which is amazing. But his backstory is so bizarre that he's writing a book memoir about it, that it's incredibly unique to him. Yeah. As an individual. It's pretty wild. So looking forward to letting more people hear about that. It was certainly a treat to talk with Steve, and his we'll get him back on the show whenever his book is published and dropped, so we can learn more about that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right, man. Well, you know what? We're not even going to talk about what we're drinking because we did it in the show with Steve.
We done did it, buddy.
We already did it.
We done did it.
So before I guess we get into the show, as always, guys, please rate and review our show. Say hey to us on social media. Let us know what you think about what we're doing. And, like we always say, please share it with a fellow dad. That's what helps us keep this thing going.
Please enjoy Steve Lemig. Let's smash play.
I think we both said his name right.
All right, Palm, go ahead. Sorry,
buddy. And Steve, say your last name for me one more time.
Yeah, Lemig.
All right. Well, we are joined today by Steve Lemig. No, I did it wrong. Lemig.
There you go.
All right. Well, we are joined tonight by Steve Lemig. Lemig. Why can't I do it right? Mike, you're going to leave all of us in. All right. Well, we're joined tonight by Steve Lemig. He is the founder of Wilder Dad. It's a dad blog and guide to the outdoors. Why are you laughing at me? I did it right that time.
You're good. You're solid. You did it. You nailed it. And so stressful.
Only because
for
it's
you.
Only because I was so stressed out after getting it wrong three
it's
times.
So stressful. So
Steve is the founder of Wilder Dad. It's a dad blog and a guide to the outdoors. He's also the communications director at Roadrunner Sports. He's an author. He's an outdoor athlete. Most importantly, he's a dad to his 10-year-old daughter, Ella. Steve, thanks for coming on the show with us tonight, man.
Oh, thank you guys so much. That was an amazing introduction.
It's almost like it wasn't rehearsed.
it's almost like that wasn't the fifth take.
You know what? Fantastic. You know what? I need everybody to just get off my back tonight. That's all I'm saying.
It's been a rough one for Palmer.
I am leaving for the beach in 3 days. I need a little break.
We'll give it to you, buddy. Well, Steve, man, we're highly stoked to have conversations with you. I want to have conversations about Wilder Dad, the blog, your Instagram feed. I want to have conversations about, and I quote from your website, your progressively bizarre world of psychic churches, spiritual cults, political activists, abusive stepfather, and your soul-searching mother guided by voices in your head that is your childhood. And I want to talk about your upcoming book that's coming out, and also all about being a dad. So I'm looking forward to unraveling this whole conversation with you, man.
Yeah, I'm excited too. Thank you guys again for having me on the show. It's cool.
Absolutely, man. The only regret I have about this episode is I wish, and I mean, COVID and geography has gotten in our way, but I would love to be sitting around having a beer with you when we have this talk, because I just feel like we're towing in for a good one tonight. So
yep. Well, we can at least cheers.
There you go, man.
So
cheers.
Indeed, gentlemen. cheers across some time zones.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, Steve.
Steve, sir, what are you drinking, sir? We can talk about drinks.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I'm drinking a Colorado beer. It's Ska Brewing's Modus Operandi.
Very nice. I might ask you to phonetically type that out for me so we can put it in our show notes, but that sounds lovely, dude.
It's fantastic. Yep. It's my go-to for sure.
Nice, man. Nice. Is that a high hoppy IPA?
It is. It's super hoppy. It's got quite a bit of malt too. So really well balanced, almost 7%.
Ooh.
And it's big boys. It's a pow to the kisser.
Right in the kisser.
Well, Mike, what are you drinking on?
I'm on my 12 year Glenfiddich Scotch. It's one of those evenings, and I amply have it in the house again. So it's back in my normal repertoire.
That's good. That's
yourself,
good.
Yourself, buddy.
I went with one of the old ringers and did some old granddad bonded again tonight. So.
Man, a constant.
I just killed the bottle. It was like, it was one of those ones where it was like, there was enough in there for maybe a glass and a half. And I was just like, I'm just dump the rest in tonight and get after it.
That's what old granddad is good for.
I agree. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, so Steve, we here at Wake Dad Drink Repeat. We are the show that defines today's dad. And we love to start all of our episodes by asking our guests to give us their definition of a today's dad. So if you would please do us the honor of sharing that definition with us.
Sure. Yeah. You know, dads have come a long way.
Amen.
Yeah. Thank goodness. And, you know, for me, I would say that today's dad really... The definition of today's dad boils down to one word, and that's just simply being involved. We're so much more involved these days than our dads were and our grandparents were, and so that's really what it comes down to, involved, and that's in every aspect of our family's lives. You know, we help out with homework. We help get our kids out the door. We pack lunches, we clean the house, we cook dinners, and on top of that too, I think more than ever, we're involved emotionally. And I think that's another big piece is that, you know, I always say that I come from a long line of fathers who didn't know what the hell they were doing. And even though to some extent that's the same case for our generation, we have so many more resources available to us, so much more information, and I think the culture is also more open to, you know, to involvement from fathers. So the emotional part of it is a big thing. You know, just telling your kids that, or showing your kids that it's okay to be not just happy, but sad and mad and worried, stressed, you know, just showing your kids a more realistic picture of what it is, not just to be a dad, but to, you know, to be an adult, to be a person. So,
dude,
that's a great definition.
Fantastic definition. Great definition, man. I'm looking forward to, I'm glad we get to add that to our Rick House is what we call it, to where we store, where we store all of our data and collected today's dad definitions. Where do you think, it's appropriate, we could certainly start off, you have a fascinating upbringing, childhood for yourself, so much that you're buttoning up a book and coming out with a book all about it, memoir style written. But you've been, I want to get to it, but before, address your today's dad definition kind of through that lens. So like we have a lot more resources at our disposal. We're more emotionally vulnerable. And you said you hail from a long line of kind of misses from dads that you've had and a support role. Like what I'm going to say, and we've known each other for very little time, based on what you do and what you put out there in the world and the level of vulnerability and truth that you put out there, I bet you're a pretty damn good dad. Where do you think your connection or your hit or your home run, how did you kind of make those links and rise above and to the point where you're really putting that bad dad lineage in the past and moving forward with a clean slate, a better slate, something more grounded, call it whatever you want.
Yeah.
Where do you think that comes from?
It's a good question. And I don't know that I've got a real clear answer other than, growing up, I saw, what not to do, in a lot of ways. And, you know, and again, my childhood was fairly complicated. So, my real dad, was a nice guy. He was a good guy. He just worked real hard and wasn't around very much. And he absolutely was not emotive at all. I saw that there were voids in the fathers in my life. And I knew what I needed that I wasn't getting from my own, you know, from my real dad and from my stepdad and, you know, even from my grandfather who was around quite a bit. And for whatever reason, I knew that when I became a dad, those were the things that I was going to supply my kid with because I didn't have it. I didn't have the emotional support and, you know, had very little, support at home, you know, for anything really.
We've had so many guests on the show in the past that have come from homes, where they didn't have a father figure or, had an estranged relationship with their father or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, I think, and I mean, this is kind of a common sense statement, but it's, yep. The thing that I've found most, and I think I've said this on the show before, the thing I have found most impressive about those people is there's this like underlying repetition in their story of instead of them being spiteful about it, it's this hunger to put a different foot forward for their kids. And not even a fear of having kids. It's, and I feel like you hear right. that so much of, oh, I had a, my mother was horrible. My dad was horrible. I can't have kids because I don't want to be like them. But, and maybe it's just the luck of the draw of who we've had on the show, but we get this constant narrative in these stories of like, no harm, no foul. I just wanted to do better for my kid because I knew I could do it, you know? And so it's really cool absolutely. To yet again hear that with another guest on the show.
You know, I think one thing that really helped me growing up too was just spending time in the outdoors. It just being in a quiet space, you know, whether it was fishing as a kid or, you know, going on trail runs or, you know, going for bike rides or whatever, just being outside alone. And you know, and I did all that stuff mostly by myself. It really helped me find my balance and figure out, you know, where I wanted to go, what direction I wanted to go.
It's super nurturing. It's healing for, it's fun. It doesn't matter the stage in your life. Being outdoors is so healing and nurturing. But to then take that passion that you had for it and be using it so much in where you are now between mm-hmm. Wilder Dad and being outside with your daughter and your wife. Mm-hmm. And just, I mean, you can just tell how important that kind of cornerstone is for you as a human being. To where it's more than just about going outside and having fun. It's got purpose behind it.
Absolutely. Yep. Yep.
Steve, I said it, buttoning up a book. I don't like saying that. You are finishing a book. You're getting it to editors. You're kind of in the final stages of a book called Just Act Natural. Please overrun me and correct me on anything that comes out of my mouth that's incorrect.
That's not the title. It's Just Act Natural.
Right. Way too long. Where did the kind of gave a, I mean, a super highlight of where that inspiration could have come from, but like what brought you to the track to write this book?
You know, I think, first and foremost, I just needed, I needed to process, my childhood and my upbringing. So I knew that it would be, very cathartic to get it down on paper. I am a writer, you know, professionally, and I've been a writer since I joined the journalism team in high school, and it's just writing is one of the ways that I process my life, and so I just knew that writing this book, writing my memoir, would be super helpful for me. And as I started to go through the process, I began and started talking to other people as well. I started to realize that it could actually help other people as well who have had trauma and, you know, just tricky, challenging childhoods. So that was really the original, motivation. For starting it.
How did that end up working for you? Was that like you sat down and so much came out of your mind that, you were done in 2 days time, or what was it very methodical and, months on end to actually get the project, kind of stamped?
Yeah, no, it's taken years. I first started, actually it started out just journaling. Sure. When I was about 25, maybe, and so I journaled for a couple of years, and you know, at that point it was messy. It was just raw memories down on paper, you know, no real point, you know, no storyline, no nothing, just straight up memories. And, And then, yeah, from there, you know, I put it down for a year or so, and then I came back to it. And after rereading all my memories on paper, you know, I realized that there was a story there. And
there's content, yeah.
Yeah. And so from there, I just started shaping it into more of a story that's more readable, you know, for people who don't know me, and, you know, we'll just hopefully one day we'll pick the book off the shelf, you know. So and yeah, like you said, I've been working with an editor this year to finalize it, so we're getting close. But yeah, so, you know, some of the main story points were as you mentioned in the description, my mom, you know, really did have, she believed that spirit spoke to her. She absolutely heard voices in her head that guided her to make major decisions, you know, in our lives, like you know, divorcing my dad and marrying my stepdad, who she believed, after we started going to a spiritual church when my mom met my stepdad, and it was run by a psychic clairvoyant pastor, and he did past life regressions on my mom and stepdad, and so the story that they came out with was that my stepdad's mother was Joan of Arc in a past life, and my stepdad was a soldier in her army, and my mom was married or in a relationship with my stepdad. Wow. Back then too. So, you know, so for them, it was like destiny, you know, had brought them together. And
let me guess, they shared this openly with you.
Oh yeah.
And you knew all this. Absolutely. Oh, that's super healthy. Super healthy.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, at that spiritual church, I totally remember the pastor would speak to dead relatives of audience members, you know. So and it was just classic. I mean, just the way you would imagine it. You know, he would, the pastor would close his eyes and he'd say, "Oh, someone is reaching out to me, and it's a man. No, it's a woman." And, you know, then he would open his eyes and look around to see if anyone is nodding their head.
Biting,
you know,
on it, and,
yeah, exactly. And
he just
would play people. Yeah, so, you know, I was about 9 years old when we started going to that church. And so that was super bizarre, especially after being raised.
Yeah, it sounds it. Yeah.
Especially after being raised Catholic, my dad was pretty.
You started Catholic. Yeah.
And then,
well,
yeah,
as a lifelong Catholic, it's pretty weird too at times. I'm gonna be honest.
It is. Yeah. And I do make that connection in the book that, you know, if you really think about it, the more established religions are also pretty wild.
Yeah.
Fantastical.
Yes. Yes.
So anyway, yeah, from there, I grew up in New England, and we moved to California, Southern California, where Spirit had told my parents that they should open a French restaurant. Mm-hmm. And so we sold our house in Connecticut and used the money, you know, to fund the restaurant. And part of that money was supposed to go to my brother's and my college fund. we were both supposed to get about $20,000 out of it. And of course it just all got sunk into the restaurant, which,
yeah.
Because of the voices,
because of the voices,
because of the voices.
Yep. Yep. And yeah, so we lost all our money out there. We lasted a few years in SoCal, and then Spirit once again spoke to my parents and said that we needed to move to Colorado. And, so that was about, it was 10th grade. So junior year or sophomore year of high school, we moved to Colorado. Oh,
geez, and, man.
Moved down to Colorado Springs. And then that's when, my folks, up until that point, my folks were fairly liberal, you know, politically. And then being in Colorado Springs, they shifted wildly to the right. And in fact, they joined, the John Birch Society, became super, anti-communist and, you know, it was a really challenging time in high school to
deal with all, you know, that.
To go through that. And then in the process, my stepdad started getting more violent. You know, and he started, hitting me. You know, we would get into arguments and he would work on me. And then he started getting, into a lot of conspiracy theories and, started preparing for the end of days, you know, and stockpiled guns and, you know,
holy said day,
that,
dude.
That we had black helicopters, that were, surveilling the house. And it just, yeah, it got really crazy there. So,
I mean, not to, I'm trying to think of the right way to ask this question. Like, how do you process that as a kid? How do you deal with it? I mean, cause it's clearly, it sounds like you had the wherewithal at the time that this wasn't normal, but well, you're,
I you mean, know, I definitely knew that it wasn't normal, that it was extreme. But at the time, you know, I felt like there were nuggets of truth in just about everything that my parents got into, you know, the idea that there's, you know, there are spirits, or, you know, that there are forces out there who don't have our best intentions in mind, you know, like there are nuggets of truth in everything that they got into.
It just
got totally out of control. And so I think I just focused on what I knew to be true, and then did the best I could, brush off the more extreme sides.
See, I would think that would make me as a parent, like, almost extremely, self-cautious or whatever about how I'm acting as a parent, because you realize, probably being on the other side of it and where you are now, the vulnerability. I mean, and we all know that as parents anyways, or as adults, the vulnerability of children and how, I mean, easily they're manipulated. And I don't mean that in a negative way, but just how easy it is to influence them. Truth. And
right.
I would think that really seeing the extreme of that throughout your life would make, I think if I were in your shoes, I feel like I would probably be like questioning a lot of the ways in which I'm doing things with my kid or talking to my kid about things, because you know, the impact of that.
Well, you know what really helped me again was, immersing myself, you know, the older I got, the more I immersed myself into the outdoor community.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, there are some amazing people just in that community, you know, bikers and rock climbers and mountaineers. And, you know, they, I made a lot of friends in high school and toward the end of high school. And then by the time I graduated and moved out, on my own, you know, that's all, those were the only people I hung out with, and they really, really helped ground me and, you know, figure out, they really helped me figure out my own truths and my own beliefs. And in addition, I, you know, I waited until, I was 35, before, before I had my daughter. And so by that age, you know, I had reestablished who I was,
who you were,
and yeah. And who I wanted to, what kind of dad I wanted to be for my kid.
Well, and it kind of goes to what I was saying, at the top of, you know, like somebody who grows up without a dad, you kind of have this opportunity to choose if you're going to let that influence you in a negative way or a positive way. And it, the same thing can then be said about the situation that you were in, because there's a lot of kids that grow up in very tough circumstances that don't come out as stable and healthy and balanced as you are. And some of that's a choice and some of that's just the nature of the cards that are dealt to us. But yeah,
absolutely. I totally agree. But, you know, it's kind of like the argument about kids, being the result of nurturing or, you know, or their nature
versus nurture. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, they both play a role for sure. You have to have some, you're born with a certain personality and a certain, I don't know, likelihood of coming out. Okay. But then there is definitely a choice that you need to make at some point.
Do any of your parents, step, biological, any other influencers, parents that you had growing up, do any of them, are you still in contact with them?
I am. Yep. I still talk to my mom and my dad. My mom actually lives here in Colorado still. So we talk on a pretty regular basis. You know, over the years we've had it out, you know, especially in my 20s, when I started figuring things out. but yeah, I mean, the last 10 years or so, we keep the relationship cordial. You know, I want my daughter to have a relationship with her grandmother. And so we keep the relationship pretty high level. My dad still lives in New England, and, you know, and so we talk on a pretty regular basis, and it's the same relationship there too. You know, we've had our ups and downs over the years, and now we're just at a point where we like having each other around, you know, even if I only see him every couple of years or so.
Is there a level of nervousness or cautiousness with Ella, like talking, your daughter, 10-year-old daughter, like having a relationship or one-on-one conversations, or is there a level of just
there is
sheer being scared of shit?
I do closely watch what my mom tells my daughter, because my mom has mellowed out over the years, but she still has some far out there ideas, and so I do just keep an eye on that, make sure she doesn't stray too far.
Yeah,
sure, man, sure. Because on the same token, like you know, it's there and it's able, and the importance of a kid and a grandparent relationship, you want to nurture that as much as possible, but you've got to say it loosely and unsympathetically, you got some loose cannons that you're trying to, right? For sorry, but like just that you're trying to, your concern is with your daughter, right? So right. You're trying to check that box of having that relationship, but you know the experiences that can come out of the other end of that equation. So, and you're just right, cautious right. over it. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I do, I don't know how to put this, but like, you know, I don't want to completely, overprotect my daughter. Like right. I want her to know that there's a million different ways to, there are a million different beliefs out there. And when, you know, as she gets older, she needs to make up her own mind about what she believes in. But at the same time, I will guide her, and I do guide her in a direction of what I think is more sane beliefs.
it's that sure. balancing act as a parent. And it doesn't yeah. matter. It doesn't matter. It doesn't always have to be on the extreme things, right? It's that balancing yeah. act of how much you want to let them fall and how much you want to guide them and finding that middle ground. Yeah. And the older they get, I mean, we were talking before we started recording, you know, your daughter's 10, mine's 9, that the older they get, the harder that narrative becomes, because you really want them to be in. And I'm sure your daughter is, just knowing you and reading about you, whatever, I'm sure your daughter is fiercely independent. Mine yeah. is. It is a wonderful trait. I love it dearly about her, but it makes
yep.
parenting a full-time gig at times, right? Like it's you really got to be on your toes with it.
Yep. Right.
Take us to Wilder Dad. Talk to us about this Instagram page and blog that's now a top 100 dad blog in the U.S. and or U.S. or globally.
U.S. Okay. Yep.
I mean, dive into that. Tell us what it's all about.
Yeah. Thanks. So I started Wilder Dad about 3 years ago in 2017. And, you know, over the years, I've started a bunch of different blogs. I did one on running shoe reviews years ago. And then I did another one a long time ago that I called it Curious Noun, and it was just a collection of stories about weird, you know, weird places and, you know, eccentric people and,
that's cool.
You know, wild events, or rare events, you know.
Where did that idea come from, Steve? Where did that inspiration spawn from?
Yeah. So, you know, none of them ever really panned out. And then I realized that, you know, that the reason was my top passions are writing, being in the outdoors and being a dad. And, when I finally got that down on paper and, you know, got that straight, in my head, you know, then that was the inspiration for Wilder Dad. You know, and I looked out there, you know, for other dad blogs and outdoor blogs, and I just couldn't quite find, the information that I was looking for, which, mm-hmm. which was just, you know, a well-rounded resource, for dads to, learn about being a dad and, you know, and then, having inspiration for, getting families into the outdoors. So, you know, there were a lot of extreme outdoor survival, you yeah. know, or extreme sport type sites out there. And then there were also a lot of, first time dad blogs, you know, that were all about, you know, preparing for, you know, for, baby to come along and, you know, and I just didn't see one that brought all of that together.
It's
a beautiful platform and it's well done. The stories that are there, I mean, we said at the top before we smashed record, but I mean, Palmer and I are very much in the outdoor space. And I have been for decades
many
now,
years.
But yeah, absolutely. But the product reviews, just the stories, the locations, the topics are on point from anywhere down from a product review or just ideas of 9 backyard ideas to keep kids active during social distancing. So it's very obviously that's more timely, but it's very applicable for any family unit wanting to do anything outdoors. It's robust and it's a very thorough. And honestly, I've been down that path before too. And I was like mentally, I wanted to do something like Wilder Dad, and you did it perfectly. Like I was like, because this is very much my space. But you do it beautifully, man. You absolutely do it beautifully.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You check all the boxes. You really
That's
do.
That's awesome. Well, it's, you it's know, a gorgeous site. Along the way too, I've met a lot of other dads and, you know, another dads who are writers too. And, you know, so that's been a great experience just getting to know, expand my network and my, you know, friend family across the country.
Yeah, man.
And there, you know, it's just, I think that's what blows me away the most about this is just seeing how many good dads there are out there nowadays.
The community that rises out of it.
Oh my God. It's just,
outdoor community statement, man. The outdoor community is riddled with it and it is its own family of people. And likewise in the dad space. It's very much the family and community rises out of it whenever you put yourself in it. It really does.
And I think the way you guys highlight that with the Wilder Dad Instagram, at least of, you know, I mean, yeah, sure. There's a lot of photos of you and your daughter and your wife doing stuff. And that's of course wonderful because it's yours, but you straight up ask people to submit photos of them with their families or their kids doing stuff so that you guys can post it into the feed. I mean, it is this, it's this beautiful, you know, hodgepodge of black, white, brown, gay, straight, whatever, like just being in the outdoors, which is the most accepting and arms wide open community that exists. And there's no failure in being outside. There's no, nobody's better than anyone. I mean, Mike and I have talked to a handful of, you know, elite level athletes on this show from, you know, golfers, cyclists, outdoors people, whatever. And then just in our time and working in the outdoor space and having met people along the ways, a professional outdoor athlete is the most humble of outdoor athletes. It feels like, you know, I mean, I had the luxury or the opportunity of drinking a beer and eating pizza with Conrad Anker in Knoxville, Tennessee, when he came in for Banff. And it was like, it was the most, he came back to our house and drank beer on our couch with us. I mean, it was the most chill experience, you know, like he was just a cool dude.
Well, and I think that that's the, one of the effects of the outdoors and nature and, you know, spending a lot of time in nature is humbling. But it's also really grounding, you know, it makes you realize what's important, you know, in life, that good friends and, you know, helping each other out, are critical. Like that's what life is all about.
There's many facets and many people talk around it, but like especially when mental health stages of people, especially in today's world, but people talk mental health and then the sheer availability of wilderness therapy, especially around my region, your region. It's plentiful in terms of how much the industry exists. And then people talk about like the importance of knowing what your minimum is, like knowing what your baseline of living is, experience that for a week so you can understand what you have. That's what your excess is. Now go live at your minimum and understand where you can live, quite honestly, comfortably. That's really what time in the outdoors gives you is really that appreciation of your baseline in what your world is and what you physically need and don't need.
Yeah, it's, absolutely. It's powerful, man. And, you know, and that's something that my family is actually relearning right now, because, you know, when my daughter was born, for the first many years, when we went car camping, you know, we didn't. Yeah. And so we threw absolutely everything that we could pack into the car.
Because why not?
Truck or whatever. Yeah, right.
If it fits, it ships, baby.
Yeah. I mean, the very first time that my wife and I went camping with my daughter, I think she was two, and we brought the folding pack and play.
Yeah.
Like it just, you know, it was crazy. And
nature can't contain this baby.
Yeah. And so, you know, we did that for years, just putting, you know, everything we could fit into the car. And just in the last year or so, we started backpacking, you know, now that my daughter's strong enough and, you know, she can carry her sleeping bag and, you know, her sleeping pad and, you know, a couple of pairs of clothes and, you know, and a water bottle and, you know, and she's good to go. And so it's been really, really fun to get back to that place that you're talking about, of stripping away all the excess stuff. And, you know, and relearning those lessons about, how little you can live with and thrive with, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I respect, Tim Ferriss talks about it a lot. I respect the guy for his good and his bads, but, he often talks about, his appreciation of having a week of living at that baseline. It's grounding. It's absolutely as grounding as can be.
I think that's been one of the things that I've found most interesting about the whole COVID and living in isolation and or at least living socially distanced a little bit more, is, at least for my family, we've really taken track of how little we actually use in our house. Right. And I think we've done a lot of clearing out, and you would think that, oh, if you're home, you're going to use more, but really you've found the things that you use, and it's kind of separating those from the rest. So I think it all comes to us in different ways, and it's really, I mean, kids bring a lot of shit with them, right? So you collect a lot of stuff when you have kids, and you know, Mike, you're in the same boat I am with Ollie. I mean, we've got some young ones, and young ones have even more shit than older ones, you know. But
yeah, man.
Well, I mean, kind of along those lines, and that was kind of a weird transition on my part, but Steve, you guys started homeschooling your daughter prior to all of this COVID stuff.
We did.
And your wife, talk to us a little bit about that. I mean, homeschooling is no joke, especially for two full-time working parents.
So, you know, we started my daughter in the public school system. And it was a great school that she was in for the first few years. But we just started seeing, I don't know, just some issues come up, you know, where she just didn't seem as comfortable, in school. She was kind of developing, and I don't know if it was because of a couple of teachers that she had in a row or, you know, or what, but whatever the reason, her needs just weren't being met, and we could see that. And, you know, whereas when she was real little, she was, you know, super happy and really engaged and playful. She started to get into this phase where she was developing anxieties about going to school. And
it's so hard to see as a parent.
Yeah. And, you know, to some extent, I think it was the size of the classroom and the noise level. She's, you know, she's got some noise sensitivities that make it difficult for her to concentrate. And so So we just started looking for other other alternatives, and so we ended up finding this cool hybrid program through a local Waldorf school, and so she so as of last year she started going to that school 2 days a week so that she could get some interaction, you know, with teachers and kids and and then we homeschooled 3 days a week, and so it was a huge success. Like,
that's awesome.
By the Ooh, end great. Of the first few months, I'm not kidding, like our kid was back, you know, she was happy again.
That's amazing.
She was interested in schoolwork, and it was the difference was amazing. So even though it definitely is challenging, you know, for both my wife and I to be working and, you know, and to fit in school throughout the week, it's been so rewarding to see That's our great. Kid thrive again.
I think That's a lot great, of people man. Need to hear that message right now. So I think I was really glad that this timed out this Sure. interview with you, because so many families are getting ready to step into this even more constructed homeschooling virtual learning role than we all experienced in the spring when schools shut down. And it's daunting, man. Mike and I are both very fortunate that we're stay at home, work from home dads to begin with. You know, so we're kind of used to that grind a little, but there is a shit ton of people in this country that are not used to that, being home with their kids and helping them learn and whatnot. And it's going to be an effort, but I think I really think the payoff that we're going to see, I think it's going to surprise a lot of people. Like I think a lot of people are going to be really surprised by their relationships with their kids changing and growing in different ways.
I think so too. And, you know, you reminded me too, that, this time last year when my wife and I were talking through this decision, to take my daughter out of the local public school and put her into the Waldorf homeschool program, we were scared. Like, we were so nervous about it, you know. We just had no idea what to expect, and we didn't know if we were going to ruin our kid, you know, and or pile on more trauma, or you know, or what. And and to take that leap of faith, and then, you know, and then be so well rewarded, has just been awesome. That, I mean, that alone has been really eye opening for us, that it's okay to take reasonable risks, you know, with your kids, and just really, really listen to them, and listen to what they need, what they're asking for, you know, through tears, you know, at the end of the night, or through, you know, pure joy from, you know, getting involved in a local program. So
as I say, there's your today's dad definition. It's that involvement, especially on the emotional level. It's being that sounding board for them, and being able to truly hear them at their level, to really listen to what they're saying.
Yeah.
Well, one, Steve, thank you for saying that out loud, because I'm sure that's affecting thousands, millions of parents' decisions daily, right now and tomorrow and the next day, just based on the coming weeks and as the school season ticks away and where we are as a nation. So thanks for that shining light there. hopefully that's the case for a lot of parents. If we stick on kind of like today's world, I don't even know what to call it anymore. I'm just toast and talking about today's world.
Pandemic world 2020. Yeah,
right. Just call it, just wrap it up with a bow. Call it 2020. Everybody knows what we mean. So I applaud you, and I thank you for Wilder Dad expressing a lot of support and just attention for your platform, and also for Black Lives Matter. So what, on that note, what as dads can we do in our space for our kids right now, regardless of age, but we have a pandemic. We have a metric shit ton of inequality going on that's being confronted in our faces rawly. Like what?
Yeah.
You have a 10-year-old. Palmer has a 9-year-old. I have younger kids. Like where, what can we do best for our kids right now? And it's been said here before, but they're better than us. They don't see what we're seeing. They're better human beings than we are right now. So what can we do? How do we make the best impact?
Right. Yeah. I mean, that it's a great question. It's, there's no easy answer for sure. Our kids are absolutely feeling the same stresses that we are. And I think really what it comes down to is talking to your kids about these issues in age-appropriate ways. You've got to do some research. But there are so many wonderful articles out there about how to talk to your kids about race at different age levels, how to talk to them about, gender issues, at different age levels. And then even talking to them about COVID. So I think, really, that's what it comes down to is being engaged and looking for the teaching moments. If you can't find the teaching moment, then these issues are so important that you have to make your own teaching moment. You have to address this stuff. Our world is evolving and I think for the better in most ways. And we need to talk to them about it.
Do you think there'll be lasting change with the shit that is 2020?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Good. Thank you for saying that.
Yeah. And I think, I'm sure that it's a mixed bag. There'll be some good and some bad change. But yeah,
No, go ahead, please. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say it's like, you can relate it back to 9/11 where, a lot of, the world just completely changed after that day, year. And it absolutely will this year too. But again, I think there are a lot of good issues that are coming up, that are going to set our kids so much further ahead, talking yes. about baselines.
Yes.
I think our kids are going to be so much more resilient, as well as way more woke than any
God, of God, I hope. Yes. I hope. Yes. if we're living through all of this right now and that's not the end result, I give up. Like, yeah. I don't get it. I heard this. I've been listening to a lot of podcasts and reading a lot about the life of John Lewis, in light of him passing away last week. And I think I always knew how significant of a human he was, but I don't think I knew the depth of how significant of a human he was. And I heard this really great story today that apparently, and I wish I knew the name of the guy, but it was another civil rights guy who was a little bit younger than him. And they were talking before John died about the death of George Floyd and what was going to come of it. And apparently John Lewis said, like in a kind of laughing way, he was like, cat's out of the bag now. Like there's no going back. Like it,
right.
The world is on fire right now over this stuff. There is no, this is that next step in the story. And I thought that was really cool. I mean, for a guy that was such a huge part of being the step of the story, to recognize this next phase was it to what I just said to you, it almost makes all of it feel worth it if we get there, right?
Yeah, and
it's not a reason to come off the throttle, but it makes it feel like we're doing the right, we are truly moving in the right direction.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely.
Nothing good comes easy. Well, man, I want to, speaking of nothing good comes easy, I want to just touch on two things very quickly, because I was just blown away when I read it in your show notes you sent us.
Do you want to say hi to these guys? This is my daughter, Ella.
Hey, Ella.
Hey, Ella.
Did that come out of your guys' garden?
Oh, look at that zucchini.
That's awesome.
So good. Thank you so much, because there are 3 big pincher bugs on the other side, so I had to drop it.
That is awesome.
But yeah, I'm pretty proud of this.
You should be. That's amazing. Huge. That's great.
Thanks, kiddo.
I love how much joy that brings. Like gardening, my daughter loves it. Like, yep. And I love when she'll go out there and just pick stuff that's not ready to come in yet, but she's so excited to show it to me. And I'm like, oh, great.
Yeah.
Read an article that like it is very imperative that you get your kids in like the appreciation of gardening, and I love doing it. However, expect about an 80% crop failure because of your kids' interactions with your gardening.
This is no kidding. So my daughter's 10. This is probably our 7th year having a garden. And I think it's the first year we've actually had any produce come out of it.
sure. Right.
Well, so I was saying before that, and I'm so glad that she interrupted us, because that's way more important than anything I'm getting ready to say. Yeah. But as a endurance sport athlete and lover of the suffering myself, the fact that you've done Pikes Peak Marathon 4 times is just like,
yeah, that's a burly
incredible
one,
dude. that's a brutal undertaking once, but to sign back up for it 3 more times afterwards. I was going to ask you, but it's, as somebody who's raced so much, this whole pandemic and not being able to really get out there, I'm sure is hard. It's hard for me. I'm sure it's a challenge for you as well.
Yeah. You know, I still get out to run a few days a week. And I have been working out in the makeshift home gym, surrounded by Legos and toys and crumb popcorn kernels, you know, from the movie party the night before. I have done so many races over the years that I had actually kind of been phasing out of entering races.
Yeah.
The last couple of years. So I've just been in.
Yeah.
It has been okay timing. Yeah. So I've been enjoying, you know, running and biking by myself. And then getting my family out for hikes and camping trips, you know, where we just go as far away up into the mountains as we can. So the transition has been noticeable for sure. Or, you know, I feel the change, but you know, I've still been able to stay active the way I like to. So,
yeah.
Well, the other thing I was going to mention just real quick was as I was reading your information you sent us, and you talked about your stint with the Forest Service as a firefighter.
Yeah.
I was so hoping that when we got down to the books that you were going to have Young Men in Fire as one of your favorite books, because that's like, that's one of my all-time favorite books from Norman McLean. And
yeah,
I've been waiting secretly for a guest to have it on there so I can have a minute to talk with someone about it.
I do have it on my bookshelf somewhere, either on this one or in the other room. But yeah, that's a fantastic story. So wait, is that the one about Storm King, or is that the one about the Montana fire?
That's the Missoula fire.
That's the Montana.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Because I think his son wrote a book about
Smoke Jumpers, I think.
Fire. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the fire that I was supposed to be at. But yeah, so story to tie all of that together. Got a job with the Pike Hotshots here in Colorado. I was 19, and we got through all the training. You know, we did the class, like 2 weeks of classroom training, and then another week or so of field training. And the night that the crew had graduated and we were going to be put on the dispatch board, we were all hanging out at the bunker, or at the Pike headquarters, and we all went up to the game room, and someone suggested that we watch a movie, and it was the old black and white movie of the Montana fire.
Yeah, of Young Men in Fire. Yeah.
Yeah.
I forget the name of the movie. The movie wasn't the same name as the book, but yeah. It's, yeah.
Oh, it's, I think it's a Red Skies Over yes. Montana.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And, so we watched that movie the night that's before.
A bold it was, move.
Oh man. It was just absolutely horrifying.
Yeah.
And then that night we got put on the dispatch board at midnight. And by like 12:01, we were picked up for a fire down Ooh. In Arizona. And wow. So that drive down.
It's a good initiation night.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. It was frightening. So anyway, yeah. So that year, it was 1994. And that year was the year that Storm King blew up. And that was a fire over in the Glenwood Springs area, west of Denver, a couple hours. And my crew actually got assigned to that fire. We showed up to Glenwood Springs, and we met with there was a fire supervisor who was there just kind of doing the initial survey of the fire. At that point, it was just a small spot fire up on the mountain, and they decided that because we were a hotshot crew, and we were local, and we had our own vehicles and everything, that we were a lot more mobile, and so they decided to send us to another fire. So this other fire wasn't too far away, so we were nearby, and a couple days went by, and I remember the morning that Storm King actually blew up, we were at a big fire camp, where there were dozens of other fire crews there, and I watched the Oregon crew load up in their bus to get to go down to the Storm King fire, and then later that day we heard the news that 14 of those firefighters died in that fire. So wow. That was it was just, yet another one of those experiences that just makes me appreciate my life and appreciate my daughter and, just appreciate this opportunity that I've got to, set my family up for success.
No doubt, man.
Well, Steve, man, we appreciate you being on Team Dad.
Yeah.
you're certainly a solid contender on the team, man. We appreciate it for it. Yeah, man, absolutely.
As a dude who beat both of us to the team, we're really glad that you're on it.
yeah, absolutely. Clearly.
You've been doing it longer than us, but we're glad you're here.
Yes. Gentlemen, are we ready for some rapid fire questions?
I think so.
Let's do it.
Yes. Steve, we are at the portion of Wake Dad, Drink, Repeat for our rapid fire questions. As we say here at Wake Dad, Drink, Repeat, the first thing that comes to mind, say it. There are no wrong answers, but don't get it wrong. You got it?
All right.
All right.
Let's see.
So stupid. All right. Question number one. Drink of choice, sir.
Oh, IPA.
Drinking it. You're living your favorites.
Living his best life right now. Bravo. All right, next question for you, Steve. Biggest lesson that you've learned as a dad?
Be humble.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good. Next question. Most annoying song, show, or movie that you've had to listen to 1,000 times over because of your kids?
You know, so my daughter is 10. It's been a little while since I'm a little bit out of that phase.
The repetitive, forced to listen to. Yeah. A little out of it.
However, I definitely remember Peppa Pig.
That was a tough one.
That's still around, and that's still pretty. That's actually on one of my favorite lists. Yeah,
is it?
It's pretty good.
That says a lot about Mike like as a person, right?
Sure does, buddy. Sure does. I like it.
All right, Steve. I have a feeling I'm going to know the answer to this one, but favorite thing to do with Ella?
You know what? It's right now. It's fishing, fly fishing.
Nice, man.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
The patience of a saint to fly fish with a 10-year-old.
So many life lessons that rolled up into that activity.
Oh, man, totally.
Next question. Your favorite band?
Oh, man. I got to go with Beastie Boys.
Nice answer. That's fun.
Yeah, and a first for us.
Oh, yeah?
First time Beastie Boys. Yeah,
first Beastie Boy answer on there.
I'm so psyched that Sirius XM just started a Beastie Boys station last
They get
week.
Their own station, baby. They get their own station. Yep.
All right, my next question for you. Best part of being a dad?
Watching my daughter grow. It's just the most amazing thing.
Pretty hard to beat.
Yeah.
And Steve, sir, last question. What trait of your own do you hope your kids inherit or model?
Resilience. Yeah.
Solid answer.
Yeah.
No joke, you strongly passed, and I think this is actually our most rapid. We've ever done a rapid fire question.
At least it's the most rapid we've done it in a while. It's the most rapid we've done it in a while.
Usually we go down a thousand tangents. Awesome answers, man. Awesome answers. Steve Lemming, did I get that right?
Lemming.
Lemming, damn it.
See, telling you. You know, I was catching shit at the top of the show about it. I don't know why.
It's a trickier name than it looks. It's only five letters. And it's still
wrong
tricky.
Emphasis on the syllable, man. It's all off.
Yeah.
Steve, man. So please, where can people find you and where are you out in the digital world? How can people find you?
Yeah. So check out wilderdad.com for stories about the outdoors and fatherhood, all kinds of good stuff there. And then you can check out my Instagram page, which is actually wilderdads, plural. And then you can check out Facebook as well, which is, we're back to singular wilderdad. It's hard to get the name out there these days.
Very hard. Very hard. You have to like buy it off somebody in the Middle East for like $5,000 if you want it. It's like, what? Why do you have this? You haven't posted anything on this page. Damn it. Give it to me.
Those are the three main spots that you can find me.
Very good, man. And our listeners certainly know we'll have everything in our show notes. And we will certainly, Steve, man, we'll keep tabs on you. And whenever there's no credit given here. No, that's not happening. Give credit where credit's due. I'm just saying. But nonetheless, we'll certainly talk about that as much as we can whenever that goes live for you as well.
Tell everyone about it whenever the time comes. We'd love to have you back on.
That'd be awesome. I would love that. Yeah. Thank you both very much.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Well, cool. Steve, thank you for your time and sharing your story with us, man. It was a great time.
Yeah, thanks. I had a blast, and I can't believe I'm only halfway through my beer.
We kept you talking too much. Oh, man,
look at you.
So, yeah, thank you, guys. Thanks,
Steve. So, another great Today's Dad definition to add to the bank. I mean, the takeaway from it was, you know, it's all about being involved. But again, like we've said up so many times on the show, involved means something different to everyone. I think I felt like he had a lot of focus on it on the emotional standpoint. You know, really being in it, it's more than just cooking and cleaning and helping with homework. I mean, that clearly that was a big part of it too, but it's just really being able to meet them at their level and hear what's going on with them, and to be emotionally vulnerable for them as well, to show that it's okay to have the whole spectrum of feelings as a human, because you're teaching them to be a human and a contributing member of society, and we all have feelings. So I really liked that definition, and it was so fitting to his story.
Yeah, very much to his story, much like the parallels that we've drawn from people with missing father figures.
Yeah.
It just, to say it brashly, his crazy ass parental figures.
Yeah.
He's really making it a positive and making it a strength for him, and especially for his 10-year-old daughter, which is amazing. So, great and honored to be able to add it to our Rick House, man.
Couldn't agree with you more. Well, you know, as always, all of the information about Wilder Dad, the website, both the Instagram, you can find all of that in our show notes. Be sure to check out his Today's Dad video on our website at wakedaddrinkrepeat.com. And while you're there, sign up for our newsletter. Mike, we've been doing this show for 50-something episodes. I don't know that we've ever struggled with somebody's last name as much as we did Steve's. I don't know if it's – I still can't – if it's Lemig – Limit, I'm struggling with it. And Steve, I apologize that we have butchered your name so poorly, so badly on this episode.
Much love to you, Steve, but you're going to be Steve.
It's weird. I think he might have been. Is he our only Steve? No, Steve Tate. Yeah. It's weird that we've only had two Steves. We've had 20 Mikes.
We've had Steves. We have. We certainly have. Well, Steve, sorry for butchering. Maybe we haven't, and we're just calling ourselves out.
That's but, true. We very well may have been saying it right.
We've butchered your name many a times within this past hour. So nonetheless, Steve, thank you very much for taking some time and chatting with us. It was a treat to hear your story. And again, we can't wait for your book to come out, because it'll be a treat to read, man. Bomber.
Buddy.
Hey, buddy. That wraps another episode out.
It does.
It does, man. To all of our listeners out there, thank you. We truly hope you enjoyed this week's episode as much as we did. And as always, guys, please remember to wake, dad, drink, repeat.
Buy a bracelet. Cheers. Thanks for listening, guys. Our show music is written and performed by Jordan Burris and produced by Jordan Burris and Asher Smith.
We always love hearing from you. Head to wakedaddrinkrepeat.com, send us guest recommendations, or give us your thoughts on the show.